Welcome to ID the Future. I'm Joshua Youngkin. Today I have a conversation with Casey Luskin about the Springer volume incident. How are you doing, Casey?
Very good, Josh.
Casey, I heard some good news recently that there's been a book published with papers in it that support intelligent design, and some of which are just critical of neo-Darwinian explanations. So tell us, what is the Springer volume incident?
So the Springer volume incident started back in 2011 when a number of scientists from all over the world convened at Cornell University to present original research papers that were challenging the ability of neo-Darwinian evolution to produce new biological information. And after this conference, the papers that were presented were scheduled to be published in a peer-reviewed conference proceedings by Springer Verlag, which is, of course, one of the top scientific publishing houses in the world. And so the way this whole incident got started was around February of 2012, Springer was just about ready to publish this peer-reviewed volume of scientific papers, and the Darwin lobby caught wind that these papers were going to be published. And they then mounted a public campaign trying to bully and pressure Springer into canceling publication of the book. And that's sort of the story and how it got started.
So they mounted a public campaign. How exactly did they do that?
Some bloggers on Panda's Thumb and some other evolution blogs started saying, look, Springer is one of these old school, for-profit, print-based, pay-per-view, dinosaur publishing houses. And it's not going in the new direction of scientific publishing where you've got online, open access, a much more viable business model for the future of scientific publishing. And they said, look, Springer, if it doesn't change its ways, it's going to go the way of the dinosaur here. But if they publish this, what they called creationist pseudoscience, that's definitely going to push them off the map. We're going to boycott Springer, essentially, if they publish this book of ID-friendly papers that are challenging the ability of neo-Darwinian theory to produce new information. So basically, they said, if you publish this volume, Springer, we're going to boycott you, we're going to hit you in the pocketbook where it hurts, and you guys are going to pay the price. So they were trying to use bully tactics to pressure Springer into not publishing the book.
Did Springer actually cave in, or did they do the right thing?
Unfortunately, Springer did not do the right thing. They did eventually cave in, but there's sort of an interesting backstory to what happened there. The Darwin lobby caught wind, as I said earlier, that Springer was going to publish this book in February of 2012. I think it was around the very end of February that this post on Panda's Thumb first went up. And what happened is within a couple days, Springer took down a page on their website about the book. As a matter of fact, it was that page on Springer's website announcing the book that we think informed the Darwin lobby that the book was about to be published. So Panda's Thumb puts up a post bashing and embarrassing Springer because they're going to publish this book. About 2 days later, Springer takes down their page about the book. And what happens next? Well, one of the editors of the volume was William Dembski. And then he then contacted Springer asking for reasonable assurances. Hey, you guys took down this webpage on your website about our book. Are you guys still planning to publish our book? What's going on? And what Springer did was they replied back with some talking points that they had also given to an article in Inside Higher Education right around that time about the whole incident. And basically they said, we were not aware of the ID connections about the book until just recently. And then they said, too, we had already decided to send the book out for an additional round of peer review just recently when we found out that the book included some ID arguments and arguments that were going to challenge Darwinian evolution. Well, we now know beyond a shadow of a doubt, I would say even at that time it was known, both of those claims were false. They were falsehoods that Springer was putting out to distance themselves from the book to appease all the angry and intolerant ID critics on the internet. So how do we know that their claims were false? Well, first of all, when William Dembski first approached Springer back in the fall of 2010 about potentially publishing the conference proceedings as a book, he gave them a prospectus. He gave them a book proposal that described many of the papers that were going to be published in the book. And that book proposal explicitly said that some of the articles were going to argue for intelligent design. And it explicitly said in the bios for the authors that in a number of cases, these people are pro-intelligent design. They have affiliations with Discovery Institute. They're leading members of the ID movement. None of this was hidden from Springer in the book proposal, which Springer reviewed and evaluated and ultimately accepted. And then they formed a signed contract with the authors and the editors to publish the book. So this notion that Springer was unaware that the book had ID connections until just before Panda's Thumb coincidentally started this public harassment campaign, That's an absolute falsehood. We know it's not true. Springer did know the book had ID connections. What about the other claim that Springer said that they were already planning on sending out the book for this quote-unquote additional round of peer review? Well, we also know that that claim was false because Springer had been listing the book for sale on its website prior to the entire incident when Pandas Thumb mounted this campaign. In fact, how did Pandas Thumb learn that the book was going to be published by Springer? It's because Springer had posted a page on its website listing the book for sale and also on Amazon as well. So Springer asked Amazon to start selling the book. And you don't usually start selling a book both on your website and Amazon if you're not sure if you're going to publish it because it's still in the peer review stage. And as further evidence that Springer had intended to publish the book, there was communication between the authors of the book and Springer in the week just before Pandas Thumb put up its post trying to pressure Springer into canceling the book. And that communication said basically, hey, we need you guys to check for any typos in the final manuscript because we're moving towards publication and it's going to be happening here really soon. So there was every indication prior to the Pandas Thumb post that yes, Springer did plan on publishing the book. And so when they claimed that they were already planning on sending the book out for additional peer review, that was another false claim. That was a contrived claim. There had been no intent on sending the book out for additional peer review prior to that time. And that quote unquote additional round of peer review was in fact not legitimate peer review. We can talk about this more later on, Josh. It was what I would call kangaroo review, designed by Springer to result in the ultimate canceling of the book in order to appease the angry critics on Pandas Thumb and the internet.
Well, wouldn't the contract prevent Springer from canceling the book deal on this flimsy pretextual basis, Casey?
I say yes. I mean, the contract did say that Springer had the ability, obviously, to review the book. And Springer did review the book. Springer sent out the book proposal for extensive review before they offered the contract and before the contract was signed. So Springer did review the book. What the contract then said is, once Springer agrees that they are willing to publish a book based upon the book proposal, it's the job of the authors to then provide a book manuscript that conforms to the book proposal, as well as a few other tweaks and requirements that Springer added. For example, one of the requirements they said is, hey, we'd like to have some more people from a self-organization camp included in the volume. And the authors did that. They actually went out and solicited some contributions from some proponents of self-organization. They're not ID proponents, but they're skeptics of Darwinism. So they fit within what the volume was all about. So what the authors did is they provided to Springer exactly what they were required to do under the contract. They performed, as we say in the law, they performed what they were required to do under the contract. And so that means that Springer was obligated to then publish the book.
So if that was the case, if they were obligated to publish the book and it didn't happen, why didn't the book authors go after the publisher and get them to honor their side of the deal?
That's a very good question, Josh. And this is one of those situations where A, justice is not always readily available to everybody. And B, make sure that you're okay with every term in a contract before you sign it. It turned out that there was a clause in the contract that said that any dispute under the contract had to be litigated in the courts of Berlin, Germany. And so this was prohibitively expensive for the editors and the authors of the book to go to Germany to find counsel to represent them and to pay exorbitant amounts of money to litigate an expensive lawsuit on the other side of the earth. It just was not feasible for them to do that. So let's backtrack just a little bit here, though, because I do want to tell another part of the story here. So Springer said that they were going to send the book out for additional round of peer review, right? And even though that additional round of peer review was not authorized under the contract, they did do it anyway. And what the authors thought was, okay, well, we don't know what's going to happen with this peer review. It looks like Springer is probably going to cancel the book, but let's just wait and see what happens. So Springer promised to actually have an answer to the authors based upon this 11th hour peer review around July of 2012. Well, July came and went, then August came and went, and more months came and went. They did not get an answer back from Springer until December of 2012. It was only in December that Springer finally said, after basically stonewalling for months, hey, guess what? We're not going to publish your book. Now, at this point, it was no surprise to the authors. They realized Springer had no intention of publishing the book. This was not real peer review. This was kangaroo review. And these are the kind of authors who are not afraid of peer review. I mean, you can look at the long, lengthy CVs of these people and all the scientific publications they have. They've been through the peer review system many, many times. They're not afraid of peer review. What they didn't appreciate, though, was this contrived peer review that was basically a setup by Springer to give them an excuse to cancel publication of the book.
That's terribly unfortunate. It sounds like this all was a bad thing. Did anything good come out of this?
Yes, something good definitely did come out of it. In the end, Josh, the authors, because as we talked about, they were not able to sue Springer for breaching and violating the contract. So what they did was they went and found another scientific publisher, and they ended up publishing the book with World Scientific, which is a very reputable publishing house based in Singapore. And the book is now published with World Scientific. The good news also is that the book is actually open access. It's an expensive book if you want the hard copy, but you can actually access the book freely online. All the papers are available through World Scientific. So it's a great volume.
What's the name of this volume if people wanted to look it up?
The name of the volume is Biological Information, New Perspectives, which is the same name as the conference that took place at Cornell back in 2011.
So folks can go to World Scientific website and look for this title name, and they can check out the papers themselves.
That's right. You can download the papers from World Scientific's website. Also, many of them are linked from our website, evolutionnews.org. And I highly recommend that folks check out these papers.
So there's some good news out of this, but there is a moral to this story, isn't there, Casey?
Yeah, there's a really interesting irony that comes out of this, Josh, because as you know, and I'm sure many of our listeners on ID of the Future know, the Darwin lobby is always saying, you ID proponents, you never do research, first of all, and then you never present research at scientific conferences, and then you never publish those papers in peer-reviewed scientific venues. So guess what happened here? ID proponents from around the world gathered to present original research papers at a scientific conference, and then they are going to have those papers published by a major scientific publishing house. So what does the Darwin lobby do? Do they applaud us for finally, as if we haven't done this in the past, because we have, but do they applaud us for complying with their demands? No, they try to suppress and censor the publication of these papers and of the book. One of the morals we can take from this is that when the Darwin lobby says, oh, you need to be publishing in this particular venue or that particular venue, these are contrived demands. They really want to set up a situation where ID can never win. Their real goal here is to suppress and censor the ID viewpoint from getting out there. It's not to have a real scientific debate. They're not interested in a real scientific discussion. And I think this shows the hypocrisy of the Darwin lobby when they make these demands that we publish scientific peer-reviewed papers, present research, because when we do that, they don't then applaud us. They actually try to suppress and censor our efforts. So I think this was a very revealing episode that shows what the Darwin lobby is really about.
And it's not only in science publishing that they do this, but they also do this in college courses too, don't they? Don't they say, you're not teaching this in college anywhere, but yet when we try to have it taught in college, what happens?
Yeah, exactly. Then they come along with their little love letter from the ACLU and say, hey, by the way, if you guys talk about intelligence design in your classroom, we're going to sue you and we're going to abuse the First Amendment as a tool for censoring your free speech to talk about intelligent design.
Thank you, Casey. It's been a really informative discussion. This has been Joshua Youngkin for ID of the Future with Casey Luskin. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID of the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2013. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.